This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. Recording by General Blythe of Tehanapi Island by Lucy Moore Montgomery. Chapter 21, Roses of Yesterday. The fortnight Anne spent in Bolingbroke was a very pleasant one, with a little undercurrent of vague pain and dissatisfaction running through it whenever she thought about Gilbert. There was not, however, much time to think about him. Mount Holly, the beautiful old Gordon homestead, was a very gay place, overrun by close friends of both sexes. There was quite a bewildering succession of drives, dances, picnics, and boating parties, all expressively lumped together by Phil under the head of jamborees. Alec and Alonzo were so constantly on the hand that Anne wondered if they ever did anything but dance attendance on that will-o'-the-wisp of Phil. They were both nice, manly fellows, but Anne would not be drawn to any opinion as to which one was the nicer. And I depended so on you to help me make up my mind which of them I should promise to marry, named Phil. You must do that for yourself. You are quite expert in making up your mind as to whom other people should marry, retorted Anne rather caustically. Oh, that's a very different thing, said Phil, truly. But the sweetest incident of Anne's sojourn in Bolingbroke was the visit to her birthplace, the little shabby yellow house in an out-of-the-way street she had so often dreamed about. She looked at it with delighted eyes as she and Phil turned in at the gate. It's almost exactly as I pictured it, she said. There's no honeysuckle over the windows, but there is a lilac tree by the gate, and yes, there are muslin curtains in the windows. How glad I am it is still painted yellow. A very tall, very thin woman opened the door. Yes, the Shirleys lived here 20 years ago, she said, in answer to Anne's question. They had it rented. I remember they both died of fever at once. It was terrible sad. They left the baby. I guess it's dead. Long ago. That was the sickly thing. Old Thomas and his wife took it, as if they hadn't enough of their own. It did not die, said Anne, smiling. I was that baby. You don't say so, much of which genres deny him now. Renai is born and she is good. But Anne went downstairs, the lady of the house, met her in the hall. She held out a dusty little packet tied with baby blue ribbon. Here's a bundle of old letters I found in the closet upstairs when I came here, she said. I don't know what they are. I never bothered to look at them. But the address on the top one is Miss Bertha Willis, and that was your ma's maiden name. You can take them if you care to have them. Oh, thank you, cried Anne, clasping the packet rapturously. That was all that was in the house, said the hostess. The furniture was all sold to pay the doctor bills, and Mrs. Thomas got her ma's clothes and little things. I reckon they didn't last long among the droves of Thomas youngsters. They was destructive young animals, as I mind them. I have but one thing that belonged to my mother, said Anne, chuckling. Oh, I can never thank you enough for these letters. You're quite welcome. Laws, but your eyes are like your ma's. She can just about talk with hers. Your father is sort of homely, but awful nice. I mind hearing folks say when they was married that there never was two people more in love with each other. Poor creatures. They didn't live much longer. They were awful happy while they were alive, and I suppose that counts for a good deal. Anne longed to get home to read the precious letters, but she made one little pilgrimage first. She went alone to the green corner of the old Bolingbroke Cemetery, where her father and mother were buried, and left on their graves the white flowers she carried. Then she hastened back to Mount Holly, shut herself up in her room, and read the letters, some written by her father, some by her mother. There were not many, only a dozen in all. For Walter and Bertha Shirley had not been often separated during their courtship. The letters were yellow and faded and dim, blurred with the touch of passing years. No profound words of wisdom were traced on the stained and wrinkled pages, but only lines of love and trust. The sweetness of forgotten things clung to them, the far-off fond imaginings of those long-dead lovers. Bertha Shirley had possessed the gift of writing letters